Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know around here we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
How is it hot out there?
Yeah, it's like, you know, 90-ish. Not so bad.
Y'all complain about it.
Well, we complain about it because this is out in California. It's supposed to be paradise. It's not damn Texas, which is, I don't even know what. That's a whole different thing. Whole different thing. But we're going to start because the music started. Thank you, Drew Justin. I'm Kyle Rizdahl. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Make It Today Make Sense is what we do on this pod.
Hey, everybody. I'm trying to bring everything. Yeah, I know. I'm trying to bring everything up right now.
All right. Well, it's Andy Euler in for Kimberly. And as soon as he finds his script and his camera, we're going to get going. Here, just super quick, for the regulars among you. Kimberly's going to be out for like a week or something. She had a death in the family. One of her Uncle David's passed. So she's taking some time to be with family. And in the meanwhile, we got Euler today and an all-star lineup coming through next week. So that's what's up with that. But anyway, it's Friday where I'm having a beer. I don't even know what Euler's having. Euler, what are you having?
I am having a an Arnold Palmer, not a John Daly.
Arnold Palmer. Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting.
It's nice. And it's actually an interesting sparkling Arnold Palmer. I had never had one before. A cousin of mine brought it to my house. So
it can be very refreshing.
It's delightful.
It can be very refreshing. Before we go to the comments for what people are drinking, I should explain my face. So I'm a trail runner, and I was out running on Monday morning after our 6:15 meeting. And that was a great run, zipping right along, and I was not paying attention because that's why you run, is to not pay attention to anything and just have a good old time inside your head.
I'm with you.
And I tripped, and I went down so hard and so fast that I didn't have time to get my hands up. My hands are scar-free, basically. And I landed on a bunch of rocks on my face. And so there's this, and then this, and then there was this thing up here, too. And let me just say I look really good now compared to the way I looked Monday morning.
Is that right?
But that's what happened. I might have broken my toe. Don't know. We're waiting on the x-rays. The dogs are here, by the way. Hang on. Bonds. Anyway, Liv just came home. Anyway, that's what happened to my face. So that's what's what. You're having an Arnold Palmer. I'm having a what? Go ahead.
Yeah. No. I was going to ask you, was it go to the hospital? What is it? Was it bad news?
No,
I had a traumatic brain injury years ago, and so we can talk about that.
Well, so it's interesting you mentioned that.
Yeah.
I was 2 miles from home, so I had to run home, right? Because I was up in the mountains, and what was I going to do? Not go home?
What the hell else?
So I had to run home. I'm reasonably sure I was lightly concussed because I landed so hard on my face. That Monday day was just shot. I really was good for nothing. Number one, it hurt a lot. But number two, I was a little spaced out. I've gotten x-rays on my toes. We're waiting on that. And then we go from there. Yeah, crazy. Anyway, Arnold Palmer for you, sparkling kind. I'm having Bunny with a Chainsaw from Paperback Brewing here in town, I believe. It's quite tasty. A recommendation, by the way, of one Deborah Clark, the former jefe at Marketplace. Yes. Anyway, so that's where we are. Let us do some news. Mr. Euler, you get to go first.
Well, that's what I was going to tell you, is that it's a nice little dovetail, right? We had some earnings reports from some folks who are producing beverages. And apparently, from what I'm reading, from what I'm seeing, there's a headline in the Wall Street Journal that says, hard seltzer fad has fizzled. Light beer makes a comeback. I mean, it's sort of six of one, half dozen the other for you, though.
I know,
light beer's not much, not much better.
That's exactly right.
And so no, I'm curious about. I wanted to hear your take, honestly, because you're not a hard seltzer person, but I mean, I guess on some really hot summer day, I don't know, is a light beer tolerable? I guess it depends on what
I'm
you call
a
light beer.
Light,
too.
I'm never going to have a light beer, but I will have like a really, you know, smooth cold lager or a pilsner, like after a run or something.
Or a Kolsch or something like that,
something like that, right? The whole hard seltzer thing, I never really understood and was baffled by the White Claws and all the rest of them. What's really interesting are the companies that made a huge bet, lead among them, Sam Adams, who in earnings
who
reports
you've talked
earlier,
to a bunch.
I have, yeah. I can't even remember his name. But anyway, yes. And they got whacked in earnings because they had to write down a whole bunch of hard seltzer. You know, and look, I mean, I'm a snob on a couple of things. Number one, coffee.
Sure.
Number two, beer, right? I'm a beer snob. But there are people out there who really like Bud Light and Coors Light and all that jazz, and more power to them. I will make fun of the beer itself, but drink what you want, peeps. Just drink what you want.
Well, and the other thing, too, I think what we're seeing, too, was that substitution effect of, you know what, I'm going to have a hard seltzer. That not happening anymore. If I'm not going to have a hard seltzer, I'm going to get a Bud Light.
Right.
Right? I'm going to get a light beer.
Right.
And so that sort of shift, it seems like, is what's happening. It's funny because I have a buddy, and I talk about him all the time, a buddy here in Austin who runs a brewery. He's a head brewer. And I ask him all the time about hard seltzers, right? Like, hey, man, there's a market. What are you doing? And he's like, it's just not on brand for us. And so I think maybe there's some of that fallout happening, right?
Yep. Totally. What's your other one? I saw these pictures. This is crazy.
Yeah. No,
just
that
get
was
that in there because it's a not great story.
It really isn't. And what's interesting, there's a really really great sort of time lapse picture in the New York Times about what has happened to the water levels in Lake Mead. Lake Mead sort of famously being, you know, our largest reservoir. And so it's funny, I was thinking about this in the context of, I've been reading a bunch this week about drought in Western states, droughts here in Texas, certainly affecting farmers. But also something you and I and everybody else here talks about all the time, right, is those farmers, it's going to be more expensive. It's going to be more difficult to get water for their crops. Those crops are going to have low yields. Those low yields are going to mean stuff is going to be even more expensive. And so I was sort of thinking about that in the context of everything that I'm hearing, all the emails that I'm getting from my sources who are out here trying to farm, trying to produce pecans in Bastrop and places like that, who are saying, look, dude, we don't have any water. And we're trying to figure this out, and so our yields are going to be bad, and you're going to be paying for it. It sucks.
Yeah, that is that's the great wrestling match here in California in water use, right?
Yeah.
It's the Central Valley where all the agriculture is, from which come a huge percentage of this country's, you know, vegetables and fruit, and residential, right? And God, look at Los Angeles, right? I mean, we've all got sprinklers on our lawns and that whole deal, and it's, you know, anyway. But check out that. We'll put it on the show page. Those pictures are really, really distressing.
They are. They're incredible. What are you talking about?
Okay. So I got two and a half things. The first one is a Bloomberg article, which points out at the beginning of it, and this isn't actually the news item, but it's worth mentioning, that there has been finally a grain deal struck between Ukraine, Russia, and Turkey to let Ukrainian grain out into the market through the Black Sea and the Bosphorus and all of that. And that's a big deal just because this war has had such a huge impact on food prices. Russia and Ukraine together accounting for something like 25% of the world's grain exports and sunflower oil and all of that good stuff. So that's great news. What I really wanted to point out, though, was that the Pentagon, actually it's John Kirby, who's now the National Security Council spokesperson, said today that the Pentagon is looking into supplying fighter jets to the Ukrainians, which, if you remember, like 45 or 60 days ago, was verboten. They wouldn't even talk about it. And I think it's an interesting indicator of the shift now in support moving from just money and weaponry to actual forward-facing offensive, possibly armaments. And that could be a little challenging, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And the the Biden administration is going to have to walk a really fine line here. I don't know how it's going to go over.
The grain stuff is so interesting, too, because you're getting at, it's supply chain stuff. I mean, there was grain in ships sitting in ports forever or just going to waste. And so this was basically a concession of, you know what, let's just let this stuff get to where it needs to go, right?
Right. Totally. Let me just scroll quickly through the YouTube chat here. Matthew Carroll, A10, but not F-15s or 16s, right? Yeah, that's true. So they're doing A10s, which are older. The tank killers, they're cool as hell looking. Ground attack aircraft. They would not necessarily be used offensively. That is a fair point. But they would absolutely wreak hell on Russian tanks and armor and columns on the ground in Ukraine. So that's a really good point. Here's the other thing I want to, we're just going to put this on the show page and warning here, this is a Kai Opinion piece coming up and I'm going to do 30 seconds on Kai Opinion. So there's a piece in the New York Times yesterday, I guess, an op-ed signed by 6 or 8 retired 4-star admirals and generals, one of whom, for simply what it's worth, I didn't work with him. I worked for him because he was a captain and I was a lieutenant junior grade when I was on the USS Theodore Roosevelt. Anyway, they have written an op-ed in the New York Times saying that Donald Trump's actions on January 6th were a dereliction of duty. I completely agree with that. They were. But I really think it's time for retired military brass, and by brass I mean like 2, 3, 4 stars, to just shut the hell up. It does not contribute to the civic dialogue and, in fact, damages the military-civilian divide in this country for retired general officers or flag officers to opine politically. Yes, they've got First Amendment rights, but I think it contributes to the hagiography of the military in this country, which does nothing for civil society. I'm happy to elaborate perhaps on a later pod, but I just want to get that out.
Well, what I was going to ask you too is the sort of consequences for those 2 and 3 star generals. Are there any? I mean, that's my question is, can you just say this up? Can you pin these up? Go ahead.
These guys were all retired, right? Saying this while on active duty is completely verboten. You can't do that.
Exactly.
And if you did, you would be cashiered and your career would be over. But these guys are retired, and look, they have First Amendment rights and they've got experience, and I totally understand that they've got valid Bonsai, come here.
You're good. God,
dogs. Willie, come here. Hi. Yes, I know. Hi. Anyway, these guys have opinions and they've got experiences that are valuable. I don't believe, though, that they should be opining publicly in a forum as widespread as the New York Times on political matters. I don't think it does us any good. And you know, there's a whole long thing to be had about this. But anyway, I just want to get that out there because it's my podcast.
That's fair.
And I can say what I want.
Without a doubt.
There you go.
I guess you want to play again?
All right. Unless and until somebody in St. Paul says, no, okay, shut up. But that's a whole different thing. So let us move on, shall we, Drew? Save me from myself. Oh my goodness. All right. So first of all, let me just, I want to go back to, the comments here. Lin's Boo PDX, who is somebody in Portland, Oregon, says, tell that to Michael Flynn, i.e. it goes both ways. Yes, it absolutely does. It absolutely does go both ways. Let's remember that Michael Flynn spoke at, the convention that nominated Donald Trump and led the chants of lock her up. It absolutely goes both ways. Sorry.
Yep.
I'm done with my soapbox. So half full, half empty is the game. Drew Jostad's in charge. Drew, hit it.
Okay. An installation art company called Meta.is has filed a lawsuit for trademark infringement against Meta, formerly Facebook.
Oh.
Are you half full or half empty?
What do you think?
You go first.
I was going to say, I'm absolutely half full. That's fine. Like,
yeah.
I mean,
we were here first. God damn it. Right.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's the attitude and should be the attitude and say, look, this is our theoretically RIP, I guess. I mean, it's a word, it's an idea, but good on them. I'm half full, man.
What Euler said. Totally agree. I'm half full. Totally.
Okay. Are you half full or half empty on Major League Baseball's settlement with the minor league players?
Were y'all listening to the morning
not
program?
Of this story. I did listen to morning.
You didn't even listen to my story on the morning program?
Oh, my God. I listened to three freaking feeds of that show. Give me a – I'm up at I literally set my alarm for 4:43 in the morning so I can hear tech and then I can hear MMR. Shut up.
I'm kidding. There's a delightful 2 minutes and 2 seconds on exactly this. I'll break it down for you. I'm actually half empty on this one. So what happened was, Kai, I'll break it down. $185 million was allocated in a settlement to minor league baseball players over the course of 13 years. I think it dates back to 2009. A collection of 23,000 players in a class action lawsuit said that they were treated unfairly in terms of their wages, right? And in the document, in the case, in what came out in court was a lot of these players are making right at the poverty line or less, and taking on second jobs, right? Actually, The Uncertain Hour did a whole episode about exactly this.
Shout out here to Peter Ballin and Rosen. He did a great piece, actually, which won I think an award or two about minor league baseball. It was really good.
Yeah. So what ended up happening was Major League Baseball saw this as an opportunity to, come out and say, okay, we got to do this, so we're going to allocate a bunch of money. What ends up happening is if you have 23,000 people as part of a class in a class action, it's going to be $5,000 a person, maybe.
Yeah.
And so the effects, hopefully, what a lot of sort of positive optimistic people are saying is this is an admission that Major League Baseball admits that it treated players poorly, that it treated employees unjustly. And so hopefully this changes the way that they pay people in the minor leagues. The thing is, the Major League Baseball Players Association only represents the 40 people on the active roster, right? And so those minor leaguers who are in whatever class A in whatever small town in New York State, they don't have any representation. Yeah. So the players union doesn't matter to them. So there's a lot of talk about whether or not that should be expanded, which is interesting. I'm half empty.
Fascinating.
What do you think?
I'm with you, though. Let me just say also, by the way, that AAA baseball, super fun. Super
fun. Absolutely.
AAA baseball is great.
Yeah.
Drew.
Okay.
Continue.
China is reducing its holdings of U.S. treasuries. Are you half full or half empty?
This is wheelhouse, Kai. You go.
Yeah. So for the first time in a decade plus, China has less than $1 trillion worth of U.S. government debt, which is, of course, treasury bonds, bills, and notes. They had been the biggest buyer for a very long time. They are now number two behind Japan. Look, they're conceivably rebalancing their portfolio. They are trying to move away from the dollar, which is fine. That's great. It's interesting. I don't think it's seismic. Look, eventually the dollar's not going to be the reserve currency, but it's not going to happen anytime soon. All right, look, so this would off Nancy Cassett, who was the most recently departed director of the Marketplace Newsroom. I'm neutral on this. It is a fact. It is a thing that happened. I have no other point of view. That's where I am.
I'm sort of with you on that, too. It's like this doesn't feel half full or half empty. It's just a thing that is happening. I think for me, a lot of my friends ask me about sort of exactly those questions about what if China comes and asks for the tab? Really long answer.
I have thoughts on this. And since we're going with, as the comments say, hot take Kai, I'm going to pile on a Friday afternoon after a
party on.
Or a half a beer. Anyway. Here's the deal. There was a point where China had $1.3 trillion of U.S. securities in the Bank of China, right? Buried under Tiananmen Square or wherever they keep their money. And the thought was, oh my God, China could wreck the American economy by just going onto the market and dumping all of these things.
Exactly.
That was not going to happen, because if China did that, then the Chinese economy would crater as well. This is an intricately balanced global economy. And I used to call this earlier in my career at Marketplace, which has now gone on for far too long. I used to call this that's a whole different podcast. I used to call this Newtonian economics, right? For every reaction, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
true.
If China went out and dumped $1.3 trillion of U.S. debt onto the market, the Chinese economy would suffer as well. So there was no way they were going to do that. It's an economic form of mutually assured destruction, if you want to go back to Cold War dynamics, right? So they were never going to do that. An orderly drawdown of China's holdings is not necessarily a big deal, nor is an orderly build-up of anybody's holdings, right? The entire deal with the global economy is an orderly transition between one situation of stasis and another. If things go to hell in a handbasket in a hurry, then that's bad. But as long as there's relatively little motion on either side, then we're fine. Oh, my God. Shut
there it
up,
is. There it is. What's the last one?
Jesus Christ.
Okay, I got Amazon has a deal to acquire a membership-based healthcare company called One Medical. Are you half full or half empty?
All right, sorry. Let me just pause here for a second.
Yeah.
No. I know nothing of this story because I looked at it and I was like, oh, my God, shut up. So I really have to now say, Bridget Bodner, what are you thinking putting this in there? Seriously. Bridget? We have to figure out a way that Bridget can get on this cast as well. I'm just saying.
That's true.
So look, Amazon is expanding. It's not their first venture into real-life medical care. Jeff Bezos, as we know, wants to take over the world. I guess here's the deal. I am not informed enough to have an opinion. That's where I am.
Okay. I'm sort of with you, except that I'm sort of half full in the sense of, look, Walmart's getting in there. And has been for a minute. Amazon, sure, jump in there. And if it makes it any more, if you have access, you know, greater access, maybe cheaper. I don't know. I'm sort of like, you know what? These corporations have so much power and they have so much going on. Sure. that's a lazy half full, but.
I love that. Lazy half full. I'm going to go with that, actually. We can have a lazy half full and a lazy half empty. That's exactly right. Drew, do we have any more or was that it?
We got one more. The U.S. attorneys for the Southern District of New York have indicted a former Coinbase employee for insider trading. It seems like based on possibly a story that was broken on crypto Twitter by a user named Kobe. Are you half full or half empty on the FBI reading your tweets?
Well, that's a whole different story.
Kai was ready, he was ready to pounce, and then that's a different question.
Oh man! Anyway, Euler, go ahead.
I'm half empty on the the FBI's. It feels like I'm half empty on the idea of the FBI reading my tweets, but I know the FBI is doing it or can. But also I'm tweeting out stuff about, you know, goofy energy policy and also sports. So they can have whatever they want on my Twitter feed. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't think it's about the FBI reading your Twitter feed. It's about crypto and this. All right, so I'm going to get in trouble here, but what the hell? It's about crypto and the scam and the pyramid scheme that it presently is. And before you pile on to me on the comments or on Discord or on Twitter, hear me out. It's not money yet. It's not a store of value. It's not a means of account, right? It's not any of those things yet. Right now, it's a way for already mostly rich people to get richer because of the greater fool theory. Okay, there will always be a greater fool who's going to come in and buy my Bitcoin later. It's interesting to me that it has taken this long, right? Bitcoin's been around since 2009. It's taken this long for there to be an insider trading scam on crypto, which is by definition anonymous and all of those different things that make it sort of ripe for this kind of, shall we say, event. So I'm not surprised. I'm going to give it the Euler lazy half full.
What I was going to ask you, too, is just as well.
All right. Fair enough. Andy, go ahead. No, Andy, keep going. Drew's not in charge.
I was going to ask
you. You are in charge.
I've been thinking about when you just said that, is there legitimacy that comes with insider trading, right? I've been thinking about, like, okay, now we talk about this in a different context than just these goofy tokens and commodities.
I think that's totally fair, right? One of the All right, look, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Shocking, I know, on this podcast today. There is a certain legitimacy that is imparted by using all the old devices of fiat currency and traditional asset management, right? That's exactly, I think that's exactly what you're saying. And maybe, but right now, it's just, it's interesting to me that this has just happened. All right, Drew, hit that sting one more time. Come on, do it. There we go. There we go. All right. We're back on Monday. My thanks, as you can hear, to Andy Ulla for jumping in today with Kimberly being out. Tuesday, we're going to do a deep dive on all kinds of different things, mostly about inflation, what the White House or Congress might be able to do about it. And we will have, as I said, an all-star lineup of Marketplace's greatest to help out while Kimberly's gone.
Without a doubt. In the meantime, keep sending your thoughts and questions. Email us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. You can leave us a voice message, too, which are kind of cool. 508-827-6278. That's 508-UB-SMART. Man, it's already over? Come on.
It is already over, right? It's quick. But look, this one went, honestly, this one went 24 minutes, which is kind of a really long time.
All right, Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera. Today's episode was engineered by Drew Josted. The senior producer is the aforementioned Bridget Bodner.
Stephen Bion leads the team behind our Friday game. What's it called now? Oh, sorry, never mind. Mel Rosenberg and Emily McCune help out. Theme music was written by Drew Josted. The director of On Demand is Donna Tam. Yes, I know I'm butchering the credits, but honestly, you know.
We didn't even have time for my pick and pull. I mean, maybe that's a whole other.
Oh my God! Quickly, come on. We'll extend it like 30 seconds. Go pick and pull.
So I have a 95 OJ Ford Bronco, right?
I
got
didn't know that.
Into. Of course I do. all of this reporting on EVs and energy policy, and I have this basically a gas guzzler. What happened was I ran into somebody who was in charge of putting boots on cars when they park wrong, stopped in front of me, and it was bad news. Got into a wreck. This was years ago, and so I've been searching for two fenders and a hood for the Bronco.
Oh my
and
God!
Found them today, and my buddy Gomez and I went out, and we were out in a picking yard for about 4 hours.
Wait, so when you say pick and pull, I had this image of like picking your own pork and pulling it and putting it on a sandwich, or like in an orchard and picking your own, you know, I don't know, like apples or whatever the hell it is. They don't have those in Texas.
So this is a pick and pull in an auto salvage yard. That's exactly right.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. So you go out and they sort of point you, hey, where are your old body style OBS Fords? And they pointed me to a Ford F-250.
So I had the first car I ever owned was a 1972 Cutlass convertible 442, red with a white top. It was blue when I bought it, but blue and with a black raggedy convertible top. I painted it red, had a white top, and it had headers on it, and it was louder than and the headers, one of the headers leaked. Right, and it was just a pain in the ass because they had to fix it all the time. So I had to go to a junkyard, and I found the original exhaust manifolds for a 72 Cutlass 442 convertible, and I wound up putting them on. Yeah, so junkyards are wild places. They are crazy places.
Well, and also it's such an interesting exercise in patience, right? I have this old car. It's going to sit around in, adjacent to my house. Who cares? Like, if I find what I need when I find it, okay.
Right.
It's great.
Exactly.
This is fun, dude.
All right. And with that, the special bonus post-show episode of Andy Ulla on Make Me Smart is done. Oh, my God. We're back on Monday. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, y'all. Take care.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.